Welcome to Entrepreneurs the Playbook. I'm David Meltzer here live at Fanatics Fest. You know what I say? The bigger the stages, the bigger the people, the greater the awareness to what your purpose is. I have a purposeful friend with me. His name is Nikhil Agarkar. He is an amazing fiduciary friend, entrepreneur, and now a celebrity in his own right. Welcome to the Playbook, Nikhil.
Thanks for having me, Dave. Nice to see you.
So I'm a recovering lawyer. You're a real lawyer, my mom would say. And yet you started being an entrepreneur after 40.
Yes, I did.
There's a hold you need to break out of when you're a professional. And you're a serious professional. I believe you have an LLM in tax. Is that correct?
I don't, but I do tax law.
Yeah.
And I do have my JD, right?
Yeah.
But that's all I have. And
how
long
did you practice law?
I'm still sort of practicing law. I properly practiced law for about 15 years before I really left. And you know, that was the hardest thing because I went from a legal career to management consulting. So something completely different.
Yeah.
And when I left, it was interesting because some of the partners at the firm I left, they called me and they're like, "You're leaving." Yeah. You're not going to practice law anymore. Yeah. How do I do that?
I was going to say, when I left law school and go to work for West Publishing, my friends were like, "You're not going to practice law?" And they laughed at me. Because the internet, they didn't even know what that was.
Yep.
They scoffed at me. They made fun of me. And then a year and a half later, they all asked me for jobs.
Yep. Yeah.
But it's not easy.
No. And there's a lot of fear you got to come over, right? And it's a lot
What's
of
the biggest fear that you had to that, contend with?
That how people are going to view you, right?
Because really? That was the biggest.
You're an attorney, right? I'm an attorney. I'm established, right? I got the trappings of an attorney. Now I'm going to start over. I'm going to completely blow up my career that I've built for 15 years. You know, I built and sold my own practice, right? So I had a long career doing just law, but it wasn't fulfilling. It wasn't what I wanted to do. And honestly, building that business, building that law firm showed me what I should be doing. And I should be building businesses and then showing others that it's possible. And it's possible, honestly, if you go into the numbers first. Too many entrepreneurs look to what I call the clouds, marketing, sales, the website. Oh, I got this flyer. Look at my business card. None of it matters.
Game, website, social, logos.
Oh, my God. The logo. Starting to get me started.
Swag. Yeah. I know when someone wants an investment from me and they have swag to give to me, I'm thinking they need to go see Nikhil because this math does not make sense.
It doesn't make sense. When you're spending all of this money, where's the revenue coming in? And that's where we should focus, right? I think about Sarah Blakely, who started Spanx, right? Her model was make the product, ship the product, get the money, build more product with that money. That is a business model, right? But if we don't have that attention to detail, we're not down in the dirt actually working on the foundation of our business, and we get caught up in the clouds, you're never going to build a good business because it's based on finance and it's based on what's in the bank.
One of the other things, especially with every single entrepreneur, CEO wanting to be a content celebrity, is that they get so busy working, they forget to make money. Yeah. So beyond the necessity to look at the numbers, within the context of intentional behaviors lies time. Where we're spending our time and what we consider to be worth compared to what I call activity we get paid for.
Yeah.
Like Sarah Blake.
Yeah.
Right? She wanted her activity to get paid for.
That's right. That's right. And so that's a great point because I think a lot of entrepreneurs too come to events like this thinking, all right, I'll just go. There's no plan. There's no, as you said, intentionality. If I'm going to come to an event like this, there's a reason. I know who I'm going to meet. I know what I want out of this event. I know what success looks like, right? Because ultimately, this is here every year, right?
Yeah.
And if I'm going to come back and do it again, I want to know I got some ROI from actually spending all of that time and money going to this place. So it's a mindset shift because, look, these events are a lot. They're a lot, right? You could find one in your city.
This one is a lot.
Yeah, but you could find an event like this, not as much as this maybe, but you can find an event like this any day of the week in your city, right? But ultimately, why are you doing it? Why are you going there? Who are you going to meet? And how is it going to actually return the amount of money that you're putting into it? Because if it isn't, don't do it again. But you can't know that if you're not flying with intentionality, right? If you're just flying blind and you're just hoping, probably not going to work out.
had a training today on having a framework and reframing things and utilizing the numbers. You need also to have a framework around what we're doing. I've always been good at making money. I have not been good till the last 18 years of my career of keeping and growing my money. I didn't even know the difference between an agent, a broker, or a fiduciary. And I had over $100 million.
Yeah.
And I thought that a financial agent or planner knew more about my money or what to do with it than an average salesperson. But that doesn't seem to be true.
It's not true at all.
What is the difference of being a fiduciary like you, and why should people at least consider talking to one with the billions of dollars that they have?
Yeah.
Work hard.
Yeah. And look, I think that we have to come up with what is the definition of a fiduciary? You know, there you see these commercials and you get advice that it's like, hey, you want to be working with a fiduciary. So what do? You walk into someone's office and you ask them, are you a fiduciary? And they say yes. What else are you asking them? What does that mean, right? So a fiduciary not only has to have your best interest in mind, but you really want to make sure that what is then the mechanism to hold them accountable, right? Because fiduciary or not, I can still steal your stuff, right? Yeah. If I want to, I can, right? So the question isn't really, are you a fiduciary? The question should be, if something goes wrong, how do I get made whole? Because the difference is stark. In the legal world, you get made whole because you can take my license, right? You can sue my malpractice carrier. You're going to sue me and my malpractice carrier, and you're going to get insurance money, right? I'm insured for that kind of stuff. You sue your financial advisor. No, there's no lawsuit against your financial advisor. You got to go report him to his licensing agency, right? Usually the SEC. And the SEC does an investigation. They make a punishment, right? You either agree to it. Maybe you get some of your money back, and that's it. But that guy, he's still out there. He's still out there ready for the next person, right? So it's important when you're working with advisors to first trust them. Can you trust them, right? So it's not about a 30-minute meeting and then give me all your money. You've got to develop that over time, right? You've got to actually know what this person is doing with your money. And then second, understand the mechanism for making yourself whole, because it doesn't matter if they're a fiduciary or not. If something goes wrong, you want to know that I had the quickest path to getting my money back if something happened.
Incredible. And then taking it to the next level, tax.
Yeah.
Once again, when I was looking at the money that I had, the money I lost, how I could have protected that money, one of the most interesting things about money is the biggest expense that everyone in America has, everyone, is something they don't look at.
Yep.
Which is tax. Well over 50% of your money you pay in taxes. So that means every penny you make, if you learned about how to utilize the tax law statutes to your favor, because they're actually there to be as a citizen in your favor.
Yeah.
Not as punishment.
That's right.
And as a tax lawyer and a fiduciary, just the elevation of awareness to the importance of tax, but actually knowing how to put somebody in the favor of tax, help them punish the tax.
Yeah. Yeah. And so look, the tax code rewards three kinds of people: investors, real estate people, and business owners. So if you're not one of those three, if you're not in one of those three big buckets right now, there's a whole oil and gas thing too, but I don't know, anyone going out wildcatting in the sands, right? We're looking for oil. But those are the three big buckets. If you're not in one of those buckets and you're just a straight W-2 employee, you're going to get screwed. You're going to get screwed because the government doesn't really incentivize you to go get a job. The government incentivizes you to create jobs, right? And that's what the IRS code does. They want you to be a business owner so that you can create jobs for people, right? But those jobs for people are the revenue base, right? I call W-2 earners making between $200,000 and $600,000 a year the unfortunate rich. Because unfortunately, they have a lot of money, but it's almost all going to go out the door to tax, right? Because they're just straight W-2. They have no way to take the massive deductions that business owners and others get from the tax code, which favors. It is very much a manual of wealth creation, but you got to know where you got to pick your spots and where you're going to create that wealth.
It's interesting because business owner is obviously has two things that make it the most difficult to take advantage of the tax code: employees and overhead.
Yeah. Yeah. And those two things are the same, right? But the biggest advantage they have.
But you know, see, I think they're the same except for in the aspect of a quantifiable measurement of emotional expense.
Yeah, that's fair.
Which is so expensive.
That's fair. But here's the difference, right? So we talk about frameworks, right? Let's reframe your mind to actually enjoy those expenses, because whereas W-2 earners pay taxes first and then expenses with what's left over, business owners pay expenses first and then taxes on what's left over. So I tell people all the time, my small business owner clients, hey, you're going to take that trip. You're going to go down to Naples, right? Oh, with the family vacation. You're going to find a group in Naples to talk to. Or you're going to find a facility that you want to tour because maybe you're going to do a business deal with that. And what did I just do? I just paid for your flight and your hotel and your meals for the whole stay on the business before you paid tax. So the benefit is there. It's just unlocking it in the code and making sure that we understand what's legal, what's proper, and what documentation we need to really keep more money in your pocket.
And on the emotional expense side, nothing takes a bigger toll than losing our money. And it can be devastating to the point where I don't know what the percentage of people that take their own life, but the majority are either from mental illness or financial distress.
Yeah.
That covers almost everyone that kills himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes drug overdose, but usually that has emotional problems. How do you help people with your knowledge, your experience, and your relationships diminish this emotional expense aspect?
Pay yourself first. So many entrepreneurs, hey, everyone else first. And then whatever's left over, maybe I'll take a little bit. Prioritize yourself first. Because you can't have fun in business if you're poor. If you're constantly strapped, it's no fun, right? It's only fun if you get a little bit of the juice first. So what you want to do is you want to set up your systems so that whatever you look at, all right, here's my profit, right? So I have a revenue, right? I have my expenses. Oh, that's my profit. Let's change that formula. Let's have your revenue, take out what you want in profit, then pay your expenses with the rest. Because if you have this little profit bundle and it's growing over time and you keep paying yourself, you're going to feel really good about how the business is doing, because and that will sustain you even a little bit, right? I mean, you remember these days, right? When you weren't paying yourself even anything, nothing, $1,000 would have been mind-blowing, right? You don't have to struggle as an entrepreneur. You can set up systems. If you take the time to build that foundation, then you can really go far.
Talked about being an employee, talked about being an entrepreneur, mixed with being an employee, talked about being an investor with a fiduciary, all the ways that we can enhance our lives with economic gain for a purpose or a cause, the charitable aspect, but real estate's my thing.
Me too. It's one of the best ways to build generational wealth, right?
Sure. Every law in America was based off of our constitution protecting the landowner.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a lawyer to realize that. I lost a lot in real estate. I should have had generational wealth first time around until I realized one rule of real estate. Only buy real estate that you never have to sell.
Yeah.
So if it's with other people's money, the bank's money, whatever it is, there's way too many options to buy real estate that you never have to sell, because there's always a way, if you don't have to sell your property at a certain time, to make money off the property. Taxes, rent, leases, all types of improvement.
Depreciation. Yeah.
So give me some insight on why we both, you know, real estate is the golden goose.
I mean, so again, to your point, we have to come with the end in mind, though, right? If your idea is to flip houses and keep going, that can get really expensive on the tax side, right? Because that's a lot of capital gains. Now, if you can be that long-term thinker, though, and think about, hey, you know what? I'm going to buy this small apartment building. I'm going to appreciate it all, right? So now I get that tax break as I'm building out cash flow in the building, right? And then in a few years, if you want to sell it, find a bigger apartment building, use the 1031 exchange rules, defer that tax. Now, some people say, oh, but then my basis stays low and I'm going to have more capital gains if I sell the buildings. You're not selling the building. That's the whole point, right? Is that we decided that first. Yeah.
So smart.
Yeah.
I'm dealing with that today. And especially in a down market, 1031 exchanges because of the lapse of time.
Yeah.
So as you close on a property and the market's here, you identify three properties within 45 days. You have the difference of 6 months to close on the next.
Yep.
You consider most escrows might be 60 days. By the time you get the offer accepted, almost 9 months.
Yeah.
Of depreciation. And sometimes when you're dealing with bigger investment buildings, it could be millions of dollars of profit just from the exchange. Or if you're buying certain properties that hold their value better because of rents, while the rest of the market, people get desperate. I've made multiples in millions just in a down market.
Yep. Yeah.
Once again, never sell it.
But again, this starts with a vision, right? It starts with understanding that that is the goal. This is how it's going to play out. Because if you don't map that out initially and you just say, hey, I'm about this property, could have been a bad deal. How do I get out of it now? I can't get my money out, right? There can, a lot of things can go wrong if you don't plan it out.
Wow.
And if I would have had a fiduciary, I never would have lost over $100 million. Because I didn't even understand that a bank, I had a $40 million line of credit and went in to pull down, draw down $5 million, and with no notice just said, sorry, you have $1 million, you have to reapply.
Yep. Yeah.
That could change your life.
Oh, yeah.
If you're relying on the 39 extra million dollars.
Yeah, absolutely.
But a fiduciary would be someone that would have helped me understand the lines of credit even then.
Oh, 100%, right? I mean, I'm helping people right now even just understand loan terms, right? The difference between a balloon loan structure, simple interest, compound interest, amortization schedules, it's a lot, right? So if you don't understand it, that's okay. Because honestly, our education system is set up for you not to understand. They don't teach you this anyway, right? But somehow, as adults, we're all embarrassed to admit that we don't know when the reality is, how would we? When would we have learned this, right? So don't be embarrassed. Get the education. Get an advisor that you trust to help guide you so that you stay out of holes like that.
Yeah. Well, you have helped me so much. I can't even tell you. I wish I would have known you 18 years ago. We wouldn't be sitting here, though. So there's
we might have been doing this on a yacht. Yeah.
Exactly. Or on my plane again. But we're back because of people like Nadil Adhokar, an amazing asset to Dave Meltzer, The Playbook, and many others in our spheres of influence. Check him out. If he's not the right person, I promise you, he'll tell you who is. He's a man who's here to help you make a lot of money, help a lot of people, have a lot of fun. We're here at Fanatics Fest, having a lot of fun, making a lot of money, and helping a lot of people. Nadil Adhokar, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is David Meltzer, the Entrepreneur's Playbook.